This programme was produced at and first aired on MPR, Manawatu People's Radio, with support from New Zealand On Air. Ka pai, irirangi te motu, MPR. If you're enjoying this podcast in Manawatu, you could make your very own, just like this one. MPR exists to help people like you tell your story or share your passion on air and online. Check out mpr.nz for more information.
It's time for our Monday serial, a respectable veneer written by Rachel Doré, published by Upstart Press and narrated by Romy Hooper. This serial has been made possible by funding from the Earl Creativity and Development Trust with collaboration from Manawatu People's Radio. A Respectable Veneer is a story about love and courage, but we remind you of our regular content warning. There are elements of violence and references to child abuse. An additional content warning. This episode contains references to sex trafficking and abuse. Last week, we found out about the threat posed by Lou Breaker Watkins. Has he tracked Ruby down? Who could she turn to for help without giving away her secret past?
The street photographer had been there on Broadway before. A nondescript fellow in a gabardine suit that needed pressing, his camera bag slung on his shoulder, haunting the streets around the square. Ruby knew the type. There must be one just like him in every town. This fellow seemed to do a good trade, pointing his camera at office girls on their way somewhere, young couples walking hand in hand, and lady shoppers with their children in tow. He was there again, ahead of her, crouched on his heels, angling his camera at a little girl with blonde curls. Then he stood, leaning forward to the mother of his quarry, handing her his card. Ruby imagined his flattery as he explained where the picture could be purchased. Today, this scene seemed unsavoury. With a pang, she remembered the tiny photo she'd left behind at Rat's Nest. A slightly blurry Edie strapped into her walking harness, head slanted, squinting against the glare with childless Hilda pretending to be her mother, captured by a Queen Street photographer outside John Court's, while Ruby was slaving away four stories up, behind the furnishings department. Now, Edie was gazing in a shop window full of books and the newest toddler-sized plastic dolls.
"Can we please go in and have a look, Mum? Please?"
"Not today."
"Can't we please, please have one look? I won't pester you for anything."
Ruby looked up and down the street. The figure she saw the other day couldn't have been Lou Watkins. Every town might have a dubious-looking fellow like that prowling the streets, dodging around the edges of the law. He was likely to be running a game of two-up with a crook penny in an alley behind a pub somewhere, a ploy to catch gossip for hints of richer pickings or houses to burgle. Or he could be looking for young girls. But in this town? She should forget it. Her nerves were frayed. Besides, Mo liked to keep Breaker on a tight leash. Mo wouldn't let him off roaming the country. All her henchmen were needed to help manage the string of brothels, dance halls and gaming rooms, while she kept her fingers in the pie of Auckland Centre and kept up with councillors and businessmen who had particular predilections that she could supply. The City Council's proposals to clear and clean up the Freeman's Bay slums had been talked about in the papers for years. There'd been a diagram in the newspaper that showed redevelopment plans encompassing the blocks from the dry docks, up around Lower Quirk Street, as far as the bottom of Beresford Street. Mo would be no worse off. She already had investments in Grafton. Unless Lou Watkins was in Mount Eden Prison, she'd be using him. No, Ruby told herself. There was no reason for him to be down this way.
"Are you coming, Mum?"
Edie called from the shop doorway. Startled, Ruby pounced and shook Edie's arm.
"Don't you walk off like that."
Edie pulled free.
I tried to wait.
Just keep hold of my hand. The photographer was there when they left the shop, camera poised, ready to capture a picture of Edie. No, thank you. Ruby fended him away with her elbow.
A picture of your little girl, madam, he said. A keepsake. What about the pair of you?
I said no. Did she screech? People were looking at them.
Have it your own way, missus.
He lifted his hat. Ruby grabbed Edie's arm. Hurry up. Douglas will be waiting. She had made a spectacle of herself. If she wasn't careful, people would say she was losing her mind. Edie suddenly pulled back, mulishly shaking her head. What's the matter? Come along. Ruby had no time for protests. Edie was mute as Ruby towed her by the hand. Ruby couldn't bring herself to stop and see whatever had caused her daughter to balk. I don't know how long I can go on like this, she said, when they got into the Morris and she'd caught her breath.
Bad day, Douglas said.
Ruby closed her eyes. It's nothing. It was rare for Edie to not finish her plate of food. Ruby felt Edie's forehead and ordered an early night. Edie plumped her pillow with her fist and wriggled under the blankets. A tiny feather floated in the air.
Mum, why were you angry at that photographer? Don't you want a picture of me? You could keep it in your purse.
I don't need a photo of you. Ruby smoothed the crisp sheets around Edie's chin. I see you every day.
I didn't like the look of him, said Edie.
Nor did I.
I had my photograph taken once with Auntie Mo.
A picture of you and Mo together? Where was that? Edie leaned up on one elbow.
Not together. Auntie Mo took me to a place.
Ruby's solar plexus tightened. She kept her voice even. What place? When? Where was I?
One day after school. Auntie Mo said you were busy and I mustn't be a nuisance. She said she'd take me for an ice cream, but she didn't.
That must have been a few days before they'd fled. She'd been repairing a tear in one of the girls' frocks. Edie had been nowhere in sight, and when she had turned up, she seemed sullen and withdrawn, and her mouth was stained raspberry red. There had been bruises on her arms. Ruby had been unable to get Edie to talk to her, and one of the girls getting ready for a night's work reassured her.
Someone must have given Edie a sickly lolly that made her queasy. And kids are always playing rough and tumble, aren't they?
2 days later, Angel had taken Ruby aside and told her what she'd overheard about Mo's scheme.
Mum, said Edie, your arm's gone all goosebumpy. Are you cold?
Go on. What happened when you went with Mo? With effort, Ruby made her voice gentle.
You know that man with the gold tooth?
Mr. Watkins?
Yes, him. He's mean. Auntie Mo said we were visiting a friend of hers, and she'd get me an ice cream later if I behaved myself.
What happened?
We went to an old shop.
Edie frowned.
I don't know what they sold there. I couldn't tell. We went upstairs. There was a photographer. I think he was Mr. Watkins' friend. Sometimes I don't know what grown-ups are doing.
To calm herself, Ruby stared at the rose patterns on the woolen bedside rug at her feet, sick rage coursing through her. She sat there,
struggling to still the turbulence, forcing herself to listen. Edie's face was pale, her lips drawn tight.
"They drank some of that liquor Auntie Mo likes, and they told me to drink some, but I didn't want it."
"Then what?"
"They were having a jolly time," said Edie. "Then Mr. Watkins said he'd watch while his friend took photos of me. He said I was pretty as a picture, and he made me sit on a chair and gave me a raspberry lollipop. I didn't mind."
"Did they try to make you change into different clothes?" Ruby struggled to restrain her voice. She managed not to shriek or roar. "Did they tell you to take your clothes off? Your undies or anything?"
"Why would they do that? That would just be silly, wouldn't it?"
Ruby had to prompt, even though she didn't want to know. "So, this photographer took some pictures of you?" Edie sat up, hunched with her arms around her knees and hid her face. Ruby's gut twisted. "You can tell me, little chicken." Edie lifted her head.
"Mum, if something is a truly horrible secret, and then you go away, like we left you know where, does it still have to be a secret?"
"No, it doesn't count."
"I mean, Mr. Watkins and Auntie Mo said I have to keep it secret, but it doesn't have to count now, does it? They said something truly terrible would happen to you if I told anyone."
Edie's voice quavered.
"They said I'd never see you again. But they won't know if I tell, will they? And they can't do anything about it, can they?"
Ruby could not bring herself to embrace her. Rage clogged her throat. "We're safe here." The words didn't come out. She choked. Edie was using her palm to pat Ruby firmly on her back. The kindness of it almost broke Ruby's heart. When she regained her breath, Ruby rasped the question she didn't want answered. "What happened?"
"That other man turned up."
Ruby braced herself. "What other man?"
"That disgusting man, you know, the horrible one who used to stare at me. He was one of the men who did messages for Auntie Mo."
Staring at her? Ruby's mouth fell open. She clamped it shut. There were a number of men in Mo's gang. Each played their part. How could she not have noticed which of them had started taking an interest in Edie? Rat's Nest and the life they'd left behind suddenly seemed like a murky haze. Had she been blind? Stupid? "What about this man?" Words were sawdust. Edie began picking at the edge of the blanket.
"He came in and started asking me stupid questions about lollies. He must have been stupid, 'cause he could see I already had a lollipop. Then he did something."
Ruby cloaked the eiderdown around Edie's shoulders. "What? What did he do?"
"I don't know what he was supposed to be doing."
Edie bit her lip for a moment.
"He undid his trouser buttons and was fishing around in there. And I didn't know what it was. I thought he'd pulled out a nasty-looking sausage, but it began to move and sort of pop out like a fat worm. It was horrible. Auntie Mo was laughing, and she told me to go and touch it. But I got scared and ran out. I nearly fell down the stairs, but Mr. Watkins caught me and clouted me on my head. It hurt."
Ruby turned away, not wanting her daughter to see her face. Edie poured at her.
Mum, I was really scared. I wish I'd never wanted an ice cream at all. He lifted me in the air.
Shh, shh, it's over now. It was all Ruby could say. She didn't want to hear more. But Edie went on.
He said he'd teach me a bloody lesson, and I kicked him. He was really wild. He belted me and I screamed and screamed. Auntie Mo stopped him. She told him to leave me alone for now, and they'd try it again another day. But when we got in the car, she smacked me because I'd made a racket.
Edie's voice was far away.
And Mum, she called me all sorts of swear words and said I could forget about ice cream forever.
Why had she believed the story she'd been told about playground rough and tumble? Why hadn't she grilled Edie to tell the truth? If it weren't for Angel helping them get away. In the uneasy silence that fell between them, only the clock in the passage could be heard.
Did you find out about it?
Edie's voice was muffled against Ruby's chest.
Is that why we left?
I didn't find out. We left because of something else. Ruby couldn't tell her. It was something far worse.
You're not angry with me, are you?
No, chicken. I'm not angry with you. You were terrifically brave. Edie pushed herself free and searched Ruby's face gravely.
I was. I screamed blue bloody murder.
Before she could say anything else, Ruby pulled her close again, wishing she could lock her daughter in her arms, safe, so no one would ever get at her.
Ow, Mum,
said Edie.
You're squashing me.
Can we have some cocoa?
Ruby croaked her way through a passage of Gulliver's Travels with bile in her throat until Edie fell asleep. Years before, someone had used a halfpenny bus ticket to mark a page. She used it again. In her own bed, sleep stayed out of reach. Memories, recriminations, and horrors swirled in her head, alongside plans, lists, and worries. At some point, she must have shut her eyes. Waking with a start, she flung back the blankets. The night had warmed. The eiderdown was on the floor. Her mouth was dry. Edie was restless too. Her blankets were askew, and one foot hung over the edge of the mattress. In the darkness, Edie's bedclothes heaved, and the air was pierced with a shriek, like a distant seabird.
Mum? Mummy?
I'm here, Ruby went to her. You've had a nightmare. Lie down. I'm here now.
I don't want to lie down. I don't want to close my eyes.
What were you dreaming about?
Dunno. I don't want to think about it. It might come back.
Ruby switched on the bedside lamp and adjusted Edie's pillow. No, it won't. Someone once told me, if you tell what happened in the nightmare, it breaks the spell. It can't have any more power over you.
Sure?
Of course. When I used to have nightmares, it worked for me.
Something scary, something ugly was trying to catch me, and I couldn't turn around to see what it was. It chased me up the steps at Auntie Hilda's place, but I couldn't get in the door because it turned into another place and...
Edie whimpered.
Oh, Mum, tell me we're all right here. We won't have to go anywhere else, will we?
Ruby felt a quick tightening in her chest. Just settle down, she soothed. I'll get you a drink of water.
Can't I come to the kitchen with you? Don't leave me.
No, Chicken, you stay in bed. She gave her head a kiss. This is a nice house, isn't it? And we're warm, aren't we? Try to think of a nice song.
Speed, Bonnie Boat.
That'll do nicely. She put her old coat over her shoulders. I'll be back in a tick. On the way to the kitchen, she was startled by a voice.
Can't sleep.
Frank spoke from the depths of a fireside chair in the dining room. In the dim light from the passage, she saw one of his legs stretched out on another chair, his cane across his lap.
Frank, blimey, you gave me a fright.
I had the advantage, with the light from the passage, he said.
Sorry, I didn't mean to disturb you. Edie's had a nightmare. I'm getting her some water.
Give her a couple of jelly beans along with it, said Frank. That'll do the trick. There's a jar somewhere out there. Just leave me the black ones.
Water might be enough for now, thanks, she said. Trouble sleeping too? Frank groaned.
One of those nights.
Can I get you anything while I'm up? Jelly beans?
Just a cup of tea. What time is it?
The mantel clock had stopped at 7:15. The clock in the passage says 1:20.
Oh, God almighty, these nights are too damn long.
Cup of tea, then. I'll sort Edie out and come back.
I'll be here.
You've been listening to A Respectable Veneer, a serialized novel by Rachel Doré, read by Romy Hooper. Listen to the next episode at 8 p.m. next Monday, or for the rest of the series, go to npr.nz/show/respectableveneer, or search for A Respectable Veneer wherever you find your podcasts.
If you enjoy this NPR podcast, please consider subscribing. Our podcasts are available on all major podcasting platforms, Apple Podcasts, Google Podcasts, and Spotify, as well as the accessmedia.nz app. Support this show and others like it by giving a donation. For more information, go to www.npr.nz/donate.